Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of In Accord. This one is being posted early on Wednesday instead of Thursday because Thursday, of course, is the Feast of Trumpets, beginning the third festival season in God's annual Holy Day plan. It's also that time of year when a number of us here in the office spread out to visit congregations and help out the pastors who have too many areas to cover on the Holy Days. Dee and I will be in Toronto, Ontario, Canada for both Trumpets and the Sabbath. We're really looking forward to seeing our friends north of the border. As Mr. Jim Franks mentioned last week on In Accord, he and Sharon have headed in the opposite direction, all the way to Santiago, Chile, for the Feast of Trumpets. And then they will be in Temuco, which is a little over 400 miles south of Santiago, for Sabbath services. Mr. Franks will also have a Bible study on the Sabbath morning for all of the youth in Chile, some in person and the rest on Zoom. He expects over 100 attendees to be in that meeting. Mr. Doug Horchak has traveled to Western Canada and will be meeting with the combined Calgary and Edmonton congregations in Red Deer, Alberta. Mr. and Mrs. Dave Myers are in Northeast Ohio for the combined services for Akron, Canton, Cleveland, and Youngstown congregations for Trumpets. And then we'll be visiting the Newark, Ohio congregation for the Sabbath. Dr. Ralph Levy oversees the small group of brethren in the Dominican Republic, and that's where he is currently. The members there, by the way, will be traveling to El Salvador to keep the feast. Finally, I was teasing Mr. Britt Taylor last week that he's traveling all the way from his home to speak to the combined Dallas-Fort Worth congregations in Grapevine, Texas, 9.7 miles. Well, in all fairness, he did volunteer to travel internationally, but we had all the bases covered by then. Sometimes it is just nice to be able to stay home, and we do consider it a privilege, though, to travel to these various areas for special occasions and to be able to visit and stay connected with God's people. Now, on a more serious note, many have been concerned about the members who were in the path of Hurricane Helene that tore through the southeastern United States last week. There were two kinds of damage it produced. One was the high storm surge along the coastal areas, and the other was the heavy rain and flooding in the inland areas, both accompanied by very high winds. Areas in several states recorded rainfall of over 12 inches, that's 30 centimeters, within 24 hours. And, of course, the results were devastating. As of this morning, and I'm recording this on Monday, September 30th, around 100 people have died, and there is a huge amount of property destruction. We have heard from the pastors in these areas, and from everything we've heard, no church members suffered any physical injury, although some have sustained property damage. Sabbath services in a number of areas were canceled. Many main roads are still closed. A lot of people are without water and power and will be for a few days. You're seeing photos of the downed trees on a member's property that were sent to us by Drew Tranquata, our pastor in Augusta, Georgia, Florence, and Columbia, South Carolina. Just before I came into the studio, Jeff Baker, an elder in Asheville, North Carolina, which was particularly hard hit, texted, "Buncombe County has confirmed 30 deaths as of yesterday, many more likely as entire areas only accessible from the air. Chinook helicopters flying in and out continuously yesterday. Heard they are airlifting supplies in. We got power back last night. We are hanging in and making the best of it." Mr. Tranquata wrote, "Many members have shared how God protected them. Some members live with numerous trees around them, and none fell on their homes. One family commented over 50 trees directly surrounding their home were turned over and fell during the storm, but not one hit their home. We give thanks to God for His protection of His people." Those are sentiments that we all share. Now I'd like to talk about another difficult situation in a very different part of the world. In the August 22nd In Accord, Mr. Joel Meeker explained how the church's attempts to be officially recognized in Rwanda have continually been stymied, and how the government has forbidden the members to meet for church services. Mr. Meeker is currently in Rwanda, working again to try to get this resolved, and I had a chance to connect with him on Thursday, September 26th, and get an update. Here's what he had to say.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kylo. I'm speaking to you from Kigali, the capital of Rwanda, where I've been for not quite a week now. This all began because about a month ago, we were informed that the government had published a list of about 45 different church organizations that were now forbidden to function and to meet together. So we can't meet in our church hall. So we're not the only one in this situation. We all have to check off a list of 12 different things that must be done before we can be recognized by the government and go back to functioning again. Now, we did get confirmation this week that once we reach conformity with their conditions, we'll be able to start functioning right away again. We were a little afraid at the beginning because they didn't make that clear, and we were wondering whether this was definitive and there would be no remedy, but it turns out that there should be a remedy. So the reason that I'm here now and will be here probably till just before the Feast of Tabernacles is because the list of things we have to accomplish are very time consuming. What's happened in the past, I've tried twice before to get in line with the reglementation, and there was always one more thing that was added after I left the country and went home again. For example, in order to be the legal representative of our association in Rwanda, someone has to have a degree in theology, which I do. So I turned that information in, my college diploma, my transcript, and then went home. And then they came back a few days later and say, oh, by the way, we need your high school diploma and your high school transcript as well. And I said, why would you need that? And they said, well, it's because we have to make sure that you are qualified to be able to study theology. So the logic is not always very clear from a Western perspective, but that's the way they're doing it here. So what have we accomplished this week? I've been working on this for almost a solid week now. They've accepted my high school credentials. They've accepted my college credentials. And they've given me a 3-month residency visa, which was another requirement, even though I have no intention of residing in Rwanda. I have to have a residency visa. So that's in the works. The next thing that we need to do is have letters of approval from the district administration where we have our church hall. One is that we're good neighbors and they can work with us. They trust us. And one that our church hall is in conformity with rules. So we're trying to work on that. Mr. Mundelli, our pastor here, contacted the administrative authorities for the district, and they said, sorry, you're on the list. You're not allowed to function, so we can't help you. So we had to go to the national authorities and get permission from them to be able to follow through on this. So that's in the works now as well. Probably the most difficult thing that we have going forward is that every church association is required to be under a church umbrella organization. And these are groupings of churches that are supposed to sort of police each other. Of course, we have a difficulty with most mainstream churches because the Trinity is an absolute necessity. So we've already been rejected by one umbrella organization over our understanding of the Godhead and the Trinity. We're going to knock on other doors, and we'll just have to hope that something is going to be able to someone will accept us. So as I said, I plan to be here as long as necessary. I can be here up until just 2 or 3 days before the Feast of Tabernacles. We're going to stay and try to get this done. We really want our church brethren to be able to meet for the Feast of Tabernacles this year and to be able to meet for services once again. And so we would really appreciate your prayers that God would open the doors that need to be opened for us so that we can reach this status and be recognized.
Our thanks to Mr. Meeker for that report. And again, your fervent prayers for the brethren there are very much appreciated. And we will keep you informed. On Sunday morning, September 29th, Mr. Franks and I had a chance to conduct our very first Live Hope and Truth Presents live webinar. Our target audience was not the church, but several thousand people who have been highly active on Live Hope and Truth, people who have downloaded and subscribed to much of our material and who we know have a high level of interest. We advertised to them through several emails the opportunity to attend this live presentation, and it was on the topic of whether the Sabbath is Jewish or Christian. We had 51 attend from 24 different countries. Now, we did not expect everyone who registered to attend, since 11 a.m. our time is extremely inconvenient for other parts of the world. But we did send a recording of the webinar to everyone who registered, so we expect many of them to watch it that way. We have also posted the recording on our Life Hope and Truth YouTube channel, so you too can see it, as many other people will. This was our first attempt, dipping our toes in the water, so to speak, of this new approach. And while we learned some things, overall we were very happy with the experience. I played the role of host and made some announcements and welcomed everyone and then introduced Mr. Franks for the main presentation, which lasted about 35 minutes. We then took about 25 minutes to answer a number of questions that the audience submitted. I think one of the benefits, besides the material they were given, is that it gave us a chance to connect in a very personal way with people who are quite interested and to talk with them a bit more about the church and the people who are behind Life, Hope, and Truth. So it was a very good experience, and we will certainly be thinking more about where we go from here with this opportunity. Now I'd like to take a few minutes to bring you up to date on an area of media operations that I think you will find very encouraging. I was recently going through some old One Accord magazines and saw a report from the August 2013 issue that said the personal correspondence department sent out 72 responses in the month of July. Now that was some 11 years ago, and Life, Hope, and Truth was only a little over a year old, and we were just beginning to get some traction. The Personal Correspondence Department, or PCD, was at that time basically a one-man operation that Mr. Cecil Moranville handled. But over the years, it steadily grew as our reach in preaching the gospel expanded. And now, under the oversight of Mr. Tom Clark, we have 23 pastors who form the team that answer questions that come in, and three administrators working out of the office, Tatiana Wright, Emily Everman, and Monica Ebersole, who is training to fill in for Tatiana when she goes on maternity leave. I want to share with you some rather amazing statistics that show what has been happening in the past 3 years. The chart you see scrolling by on the screen show the numbers of responses the PCD team handled each month in 2022. Now, the flow was pretty constant, ranging from a monthly low of 252 in March to a high of 397 in December. The total for 2022 was 3,874. Now, these numbers represent a wide variety of comments and questions we receive. They range from those as simple as thank you notes to very serious, complex problems for which someone may be seeking ministerial counsel. Our team answers every single one. We believe it's important that if someone even says thank you for the article, we ought to respond with something like, you're welcome, and let us know if we can be of further help. It's interesting how, on occasion, a simple response like that has triggered an exchange of emails, leading people to engage with us even more. So that was 2022. But notice what started to happen in 2023. In January, it jumped to 554, then into the 600s in February and March. After a small dip in April, we broke the 700 barrier in May and June, and then over 850 in July. But look at August. We were overloaded with over 1,500 messages. Now, I want to add here a caveat for full disclosure. It was in that month that we implemented an improved system for tracking incoming and outgoing correspondence, and the numbers for the preceding months were probably just a bit higher. But that does not fully account for the increase in the trend that followed. These numbers dropped back into the 800s in September because we cut back on our marketing efforts just before the feast. But then they climbed back to over 1,000 a month for October and November, and we capped off the year in December with over 1,800. The total for 2023 was 11,415, compared with 3,874 one year earlier. That was a 195% increase. That was wonderful, of course, but it created a problem. Our staff was totally overwhelmed, so we had to make an administrative hire and then recruit and train more field ministers to help out, because the field ministers do this in their spare time. So what has happened in 2024? Well, in January, we had 1,632. February had three fewer days, but over 600 more responses, with 2,242. March jumped another 700 to 2,933. April rose to 3,200 even. And May came in at 3,485. Now, June fell to 2,540 for reasons we don't understand, but that was just a temporary drop, as July jumped back up to 2,992. And August was well over 3,000 again at 3,377. So here's where we are after 8 months in this year. Remember, the total for the entire year of 2022 was 3,874. Now in the first 8 months of this year, we have had 22,401 replies, which is almost exactly double what we had for the 12 months of 2023. So the growth in this area has been phenomenal, and most of this is linked to our advertising efforts. We have more people downloading booklets, subscribing to publications, and receiving marketing emails, which has led so many to responding and writing in with questions. Again, we recruited more ministers to the PCD team earlier this year, but I can tell you the PCD staff is stretched pretty much to capacity. We are already engaged with some creative thinking to come up with solutions, because if the trends continue that we have seen in 2023 and 2024, it will create a larger workload than our current personnel can handle. But that's a good problem. We're glad to have that problem, and we know that God will provide solutions, just as we know He has opened the doors. I do want to credit and give a big shout out to those men and women on the PCD team. They put their hearts into their work, and they are almost always the first real person someone comes in personal contact with when they reach out to us. They play a very important role in the nurturing and the care for those whom God may be calling. Well, that will be it for this time. This started out last week as a very short In Accord, but morphed into much more. I am so glad you joined, and I hope this was encouraging and informative to you. And on behalf of everyone here at the headquarters office, have a wonderful Feast of Trumpets and Sabbath. We'll see you back here next week when Mr. Dave Myers will have the final In Accord before we take our break for the Feast of Tabernacles. Bye for now.